Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics, anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Jana, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
We three brothers.
One sec. We once again thank you for tuning in and joining us on this sometimes cathartic journey. Let's dive right in.
If you was a character in a video game, what character would you say is the embodiment of your personality?
Personality?
Damn. Not to say, oh, I want to be that guy because he shoots lasers from his eyes. No. Your personality, but as a video game character.
That's a deep...
To Ash as well.
That's a question.
That's very
deep question. That's a deep question. Do you know who you would be?
I'm thinking now as you lot are giving me your answer.
Okay. So he said that so he could be last.
Yeah, 100%.
So he has enough time to think. If I throw this out, the boomerang... Who's that raccoon? That game...
Sly raccoon.
That's what
you're saying. Your personality is like Sly Raccoon.
Yeah, swear that. No, that's dead, man.
Not your personality, just the topic.
That's dead. I don't want to be that guy.
My personality.
That's a tough one.
I want to say something.
It's something we can revisit, so don't feel like this is set in stone, obviously. But oh, it's quite an interesting.
I think we should restrict it because it's. There's way too many game characters. I think let's pick a game that has a number of characters and pick from that. I think it makes it a bit more easier for us because we'll be here. The amount of games we've played, we'll be here all week.
Mm. Well, let's keep it simple first. Favourite game?
Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater 3.
Ooh.
So Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater.
Thank you.
I got you.
Same difference.
That's the game you completed, right? Mm-hmm.
The only Metal Gear Solid game that I've played from beginning to end and completed before AJ.
Yeah, and because of that, I still haven't completed that game. I still haven't completed that. I'm pissed. And every time I go back, this is the game on this.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I find that game really hard.
Yeah, 100%.
I find that game really tough. It's I can barely see stuff. In the... Yeah, the camera angles, all that is really blodgy to me.
No, man. It's definitely one of my favourites.
I think for me, I've not completed it yet, but definitely Ghost of Tsushima. That's
really?
Yeah, I'm completely blown by that game, man. There are things that I wish could be improved, but I feel like, again, it's a game.
Mo, we're talking about favourite game of all time.
Yeah, I'm talking about favourite game of all time.
All time. Yeah, even have nostalgia attached to anything that you've played before. You're like, yeah, that game's actually sick. I would even play that now. You're talking about a game that you bought last week?
Yeah, man.
Damn, that game must be dope.
Moving with the times. Because I guess you guys, for me, gaming was not as deep as it was for you. You guys completed all the games. I watched you complete the games.
Right. This guy completed all the games.
So
I was support. You were just...
I was just the backseat, viewer.
I was
paying my membership on OnlyFans. I was paying my OnlyFans membership. So
being the youngest brother.
Yeah, so a lot of the games, it's not I didn't have that nostalgic connection to it. The ones that I did was the ones that I guess we all played together, like Capcom versus SNK2.
Yeah,
that would be something I could consider one of my favourite games. But that's not something I would play by myself.
Yeah, of course.
You feel me? So it's like the only games that I can say really I'd play by myself top game is something like Ghost of Tsushima or Breath of the Wild.
Wow. Which is better out of the two? Because you're telling me one's 10 out of 10, the other one's the greatest game we've ever played.
I haven't completed Ghost of Tsushima, so it will be Breath of the Wild because I've completed it. However, I know with time already, with what I can do, I guess the background, the concept, the story, I'm already like, yeah, this can top my top at the moment.
Do you not remember Bloody Roar?
Yeah, great game.
Come on, man. You're telling me about Ghost of Tsushima? I haven't played it, so I don't know.
Remind me, Bloody Roar.
It was a fighting game where you could transform into animals with the circle button.
I don't remember.
I remember the button to transform.
Yeah, look at that. You're deeper than me.
I even remember that. And then once you do transform, you have circle-wise and like attack
two tiger guys, one white, one golden.
Bakaroo,
what console?
The mole.
PlayStation 1.
Oh, that game was...
PlayStation 1, deep. I think.
I remember. I think
PS2.
Bakaroo, the mole. Yeah.
Jenny, the bat.
Yeah. That was a fighting game?
Yeah.
Gadol, the lion.
Look at you remember all of that. Yeah. Still dream about that stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
Hugo, the wolf.
Look at that.
And you can do some crazy combos. Specials, Long the tiger. Kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
Ring outs. It's a great game.
Yeah. That was a good game. You've not given you a favorite. What's your favorite? Of all time.
I think you guys would appreciate. I'm a huge mecha fanboy, it's going to be a mecha based game and it's going to be Zone of Enders 2. Just to be able to fly in a mech and whatever, especially with the VR.
I was going to say, VR version.
Have you completed that yet?
No, I'm on the last boss and
I just keep stopping.
Wait,
no.
You've almost completed that game already.
Yes.
Isn't it? He hasn't touched it in weeks. This is before. Like, I saw him fighting the last boss ages ago and I was like, damn, he's here already. He's had the VR game for like, since Christmas.
He's a husband. He's a father.
He's a gamer.
He's a gamer.
No, to be fair. He
clocks games.
To be fair.
Quicker than you can think.
To be fair, the campaign is like 6 hours long.
That sounds like a lot of semen retention, bro. For you to be completing that game real quick.
Hear me out. So obviously work and family time. The only real opportunity I have is when everyone goes to bed and I've got work in the morning. So I'll do like an hour. And if you've got a headset on your head for an hour, you know about it in an hour's time. Like, okay, let me take it off now. So that in the course of a week, you can finish the campaign by just doing an hour per day when, you know, you have that time to yourself.
Making it sound like meditation. I played VR video games.
Once you have an hour to yourself.
Self-healing. PlayStation VR.
So the only reason I didn't finish the game is not because the boss was hard, because it's very doable. It's just that I don't want it to end yet.
He's still living his childhood dream. Because the moment you played it the first time, I don't know if you remember, Ash, the first time he put that headset on, this guy was like, I'm 12 again.
He fell in love.
It's like,
yeah.
I don't know what to get this guy. Does he need a pillow? Does he need a towel? Just give him a blanket. Ash, sorry, I think he's staying tonight. I think you might have a new roommate.
Just the ability to put the headset on and it seems as if I'm in the mech was just, I never imagined it. And I remember like when I was starting the game up, I was like, oh, it's going to be third person and I'll just see the mech in front of me, like how it was originally on the PS2. But you're actually in the cockpit, as you're aware, and you look around, and when you're doing actions with the buttons, you can see the mech doing the actions. So it's just that the simulation of you being right there, as you can tell from my excitement.
Even now.
So yeah, my favourite game would be Zone of Enders 2.
What are you going for, Ash? You got a favourite game?
Favourite's hard.
Of all time.
I've got a soft spot for Final Fantasy IX. I still own a copy of it before this game.
Which one's that?
Zidane.
Is it with that water ball stuff?
No, that's 10.
Okay, no, I didn't really like that.
Vivi the Dark Mage and...
Okay, Steiner. I know this one. Yeah, awesome. Okay.
I'm not sure about favourite, but I got a soft spot for it, yeah. Nostalgia, maybe.
Which is the difference if we take it back to kids being exposed to adult content. When we were kids with games and stuff, you had the disc which is made and that's it. But the games the kids play now are all online with other people. And because it's online with other people, it's faceless. So it could be anyone.
Mm.
So, I don't know. I think for my kids, I'll prefer them to... They can have the PlayStation 2.
Game amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Stay offline.
So I know you wanted to, or you remembered what you was referring to before in your point.
No, that was something separate. This was a topic to discuss. And I wanted to hear what's going on with you guys, with work, with COVID, how you feeling. I wanted to tell you guys how I'm feeling about my work and what's going on with my work. Obviously, we probably shouldn't say any names of companies. I'm not so sure how that works. We can look into that. But to be safe, we probably shouldn't. But I can start.
Yeah, go for it.
So I work for a charity. And the charity essentially does loads of different projects. They get contracts for different things. So helping homeless people, helping people with drug addiction, helping people with housing issues. One project they have is housing Syrian refugees across Oxfordshire. So the project that I'm working on is one that's... It's with the NHS, essentially. It's a project with the NHS. And the issue, or the reason for the project, is when people are facing complex personal issues, and this can be things like drug addiction, homelessness, or domestic abuse, or anything, really. Anything which would put someone in a situation where they would seek refuge in A&E. So a homeless person doesn't have a place to end up at the end of the day, of course, being homeless. So they would go to the hospital and just stay there. So they have a place to sleep. And people who have addiction problems, there's somewhat of a revolving door in the hospital, in the A&E department in particular. Because the core social problem is not being solved. So if you're returning to hospital continuously for domestic abuse from a partner, okay, A&E will help you with your hurt, but you just go back to the same place where it's happening. So essentially, that was the need for the project that I do. And the project that I do is I basically, I work with volunteers. I get the volunteers to go to the A&E department, and we try and identify people who may just talk to people in the A&E, see what issues they may have, and if we can help them or even direct them to where they can get help. And the aim of that is to try and reduce the numbers going into A&E.
So is that actually people inside, like, the waiting room?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the main target, but there are other parts of the hospital which we have access to. But that's the main.
And how do you feel like
targeted area?
How is that? Because I can imagine during COVID, you can't just be up in any hospital just like that.
Yeah,
how can you really, you know, have those conversations with people when, you know, you can't even really, you can't even see half of their face.
Yeah.
You know, you see the mask is covering the majority of it. There's also very sick people. Your fears
I mean, you're in hospital. That's where people are dying a lot of the time. So what actually happened was, when I got the job, the day I started, the following day, so I went in and I get signed up and I meet my managers and, you know, doing the whole induction process. But Boris Johnson declares a lockdown. The Prime Minister of the UK declares the third lockdown, and we've been locked down since. But one thing that the hospital had made clear, the hospital which I'm stationed in, is they don't want anyone who doesn't need to be in the hospital to come to the hospital, because the numbers of COVID were so high. So essentially, I've been working from home as best as I can. But there's this this weird fear. Not weird, there's nothing weird about it. I guess it's quite normal that I have it. But there's this fear of when things, you know, when the lockdown's lifted and we can go back, I feel like I'm going into the
belly of the beast.
Yes, exactly. The
dragons then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ground zero.
Damn, you better go with your mech suit. Zone of Enders suit, bro.
You say that, he's going to go in with his VR headphones on.
I don't need to be here.
So, of course, there's... the company I work for has ordered all sorts of PPE. And as I'm the coordinator for the volunteers, which basically means my job is not to be in the emergency department myself. It's just to manage the volunteers for doing it. So if they have any issues, if they need anything done, I'm the guy they come to. And that I have my manager who I report to for the same thing. If there's anything I can't do, I go to her. But I make sure that they're trained. I make sure that everything, they have their PPE, everything that they need to do the job. But essentially, it hasn't been able to move forward because of the
lockdown. Situation we're in. Okay.
So I'm in this really weird stage of work where it's like, there is a fear to go back, but if I don't go back, then the project's actually not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And one thing, because we're considered as key workers, I was offered the vaccine. I've been offered it twice, actually. But I declined it twice.
Interesting.
Yeah. Didn't expect that from you, actually.
Yeah, wow, interesting.
I thought you was quite, I don't want to say pro taking the vaccine, but I feel like you're quite a progressive person. So I thought that, yeah, you would have accepted it. Why didn't you accept it?
Well, at the time when I was getting it done, there's still the issue of the amount of the vaccine. By the time it was offered to me, there was still an issue of the amount of vaccine that's in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, as someone who's young and relatively healthy, well, I'm quite healthy, and no underlying issues, I thought it would be a disservice for me to take that vaccine away from someone who is more vulnerable.
Yeah.
So that's why. So instead, I've chosen to not take it and to work from home. And when I do have to go back, just protect myself as best as possible. You know, just make sure I've got my mask on, gloves when appropriate, hand sanitizer, washing my hands, not, you know, licking doors or anything like that. So that's how it is for me right now. It's a bit weird, but
yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are obviously not in the exact same situation, and I think that's very heroic of you to decline the vaccine for that reason. I think that's, yeah, I didn't think that that's what you would have said. But I think there's a lot of people that are in that position of being in limbo. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't even know if they're going to have a place to go back to work. You know, so I think that's a lot of mental torture that you kind of have to go through. It's like, I kind of need to work. I also need to be safe. I also need to, like, have a job. I'm not actually physically doing it, like, a lot of what I'm supposed to be doing in work because I can't. You know, the lockdown's here. What is it that, what do I do?
Yes.
I can imagine, like, people's anxiety are through the roof when it comes to that. You know, I am quite fortunate. Working in tech, it's quite fast moving. And, you know, the pandemic came and we had already incorporated within our work system working from home. It wasn't something we did every day, but it was already like part of the culture. We've kind of already had this in flight. All we have to do is just turn on the tap. You know, we just flip the switch. And I think, yeah, we didn't have to make that much of an adjustment where so many other sectors and just, I guess, people that do different jobs, they really had to like completely adapt their whole way of working. But yeah, I'm quite fortunate, but I can imagine the anxiety for the people that maybe, you know, do have to have a career change or they're not going to have a job when they go back. You know, there's certain things like Topshop and those places, the Arcadian Group has been sold to ASOS. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's good for ASOS, but ASOS is not taking any of their stores. So what happens to all of the people?
Online brand, right?
Yes. So what happens to all of the people that are working in those stores? You know, there's a lot of those stores across the whole of the UK that employed so many different people, you know, whether you're doing back office work, whether you're doing, you know, management work, whether you're actually in the retail store, like that whole operation model had so many hands in there and you've just cut them all off. What do they do? That's a lot of people.
But to be fair, I would even argue pre-COVID, because it's essentially the high street. The high street was... you know, was dying or was dead. It was just its corpse that was being dragged, really. So I think COVID just kind of accelerated the cultural change for people buying more online.
It was definitely inevitable. Yeah. And shout out to Gambino with that album, because the internet inspired me to actually go into, you know, the work sector that I'm in. It was definitely inevitable, but damn, I didn't think it was going to happen like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no one did, right? No one did.
But that's, yeah, that's my experience with working in COVID at the moment.
When you were working, how was that for you, Oz?
It was quite weird. The digital marketing company that I was working with, they only gave me, in my opinion, quite minimal training for what it is. The job itself isn't that hard, just to produce content, like writing articles. But there was minimal training, and...
Let's say not hard labor, because I think that's still a job that requires skill.
Yeah, of course.
Still a skills job.
It wasn't particularly hard labor, but...
And you could do it from home?
Yes. Yes. And that was the first job I got since coming back to the UK. And I thought I was hitting my stride. I was completing the work. I wasn't working as hard as I could have, which is...
Do you think being in the office, or if you was in a physical environment, you would have worked harder?
Yes. And it's something that I've had to... I'm pretty sure loads of people have had to... is to train myself to, okay, if it is work time, wake up at this time, work for however long, have an actual break, and actually structure your working day as you would if you were in the office. Take it a bit more seriously. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think the company themselves weren't doing as good as they thought they was. There's 1,000 reasons under the sun that you could try and give, but they ended up not continuing my contract. I was only on a probationary contract, so 3 months in of a 6-month contract, because I didn't fit the culture of the company. Now, that's, for me, quite a loaded statement to say that someone doesn't fit the culture of your company, because companies are quite hot on that to say, oh, we want you to come to work for us because we have a great culture, or we're multicultural in some cases.
Not only that, but how can you expect someone, how can you have an idea of that when everything's been remote? You know, we've not been in the office. What culture, you know, companies don't have that culture. We've all had, even tech companies, you know, have all had to adapt and create that new working from home culture. So how can you say you don't fit the culture when it's still something that's kind of newly formed, right? Part of that is, I guess, the personal touch, or the personal meetings and conversations and what actually, for me, that's what I think, you know, work culture kind of is.
Yeah, do you know what? I feel like I'm quite an approachable guy, quite friendly. Like, I can have a conversation with someone. But the people there, just, I don't know, our walks of life are just too different. Our personal interests were just too different. So I kind of get it when I say it, because, again, it's a loaded statement to say you don't fit the culture. But there is a part of me that reserves a bit of peace from the entire situation to be like, actually,
I didn't fit in anyway.
Yeah, 100%. From the jump, I'm there with people talking about, oh, I'm going to get lip filler for Christmas. I beg your pardon?
During COVID?
Yeah.
People 100%. Doing that.
But so... To relate, when you was working there, they asked you to work from home.
Yes.
Was there any support or anything that they were given because of COVID or?
So you get like the standard stuff where they give you working equipment, but in terms of the support, we were morning meetings, stuff like that.
Where you were having.
Yeah, everyone would have to like a rundown to say, I did this yesterday, I'm going to do this today, this kind of thing. But taking away the human touch from that, like that morning meeting, you sit down all in a circle, you look each other in the eye. Like with this particular company, it was only the manager who had her camera on.
You're just gonna say not everyone's gonna have their camera on anyway, man.
No one else would. And the first few times I did it, because I kind of don't really care. Like, it's kind of a novelty almost. I was quite into it and quite enjoying it.
My preference is not to have my camera on, if I'm honest. Camera and mic off, unless I need to say something.
But that's the norm, and it's super difficult, because I say that I'm quite friendly and quite approachable. I'm also quite introverted in that sense, that unless you sit down and actually have a chat to me, I'm not going to be the loud, like, Larry walk over. Oh, so what's going on with you? Oh, where are you from? Something like that. I'm more of, cool. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, what a cool jumper. Something like this. I don't know. So perhaps I didn't have the opportunity to create, well, foster those friendships or those bonds that are essential in the working environment. Because you must think that you spend a lot of your day with these people. Well, traditionally, you spend a lot of your day with these people. Similar like you would with your friends or teachers at school.
Yeah.
It's a similar sort of vibe.
You spend a lot more time with other people than you do with your family or your home setting.
Which is crazy.
I think it also makes it more enjoyable, right? Like
100%.
The process. And I think one of the things I had to do adjusting was home is meant to be chill time, or maybe like a different focus area of my life. Now that's now merged with work. I've had to change my whole routine completely. I've had to change my actual setting. You know, I have to, I thought I could just sit on my sofa and have a little table and I can still do the work. But, you know, as you said, I felt like maybe I could have worked a bit harder. And I think productivity wise, it's more difficult because you're at home and home is meant to be, I'm not working. But, well, I guess traditionally, right?
But you see, for me, because you get papers published now saying that, I don't know how factual these are, I haven't checked, but saying that productivity has gone down in general. And for me, it's like, well, it's too early to call, to definitively say working at home is, you become less productive. It's too early to call because people are making that change. This is not normal. They're still figuring out how it's supposed to work. But when you put it in a setting, like, you know, you get up, you get ready, you have your section of your house or whatever where things are in place for you to do work, that might be, as it becomes the norm, it might be very productive. So I don't know. I think it's a bit too early to call.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's that transition that you've mentioned. That's what I believe is the toughest part.
Yes.
The toughest. And mine's just one experience. Obviously, there's people out there who were doing quite, I don't know, work that they were super invested in and absolutely adored, the people that they worked with, 10 years into a company, and then suddenly, boom, okay, you're dragged away from that support group and you have to try and find different forms of maintaining those relationships. Like, we had this thing in this company where every Monday you get sent, two names get drawn out of a hat. You have to have a video call sometime this week. Can be 10 minutes, can be an hour, whatever. And it's an interesting concept and I think quite good, but also virtually.
It doesn't feel natural.
Like I did it 3 times with three people who I haven't even met. Never seen him in the flesh. This is all, like, I've been to the office a few times, never met these people. But I'm having there to be like, oh, okay, so what do you do in the company? How the hell is that the start of a conversation? Like, well, who are you, first of all, foremost? We both work for the same company, we're both getting paid by the same man, but we don't know what we're doing. A massive disconnect there for me. Really struggles.
See, I'd much rather prefer that. I'd much rather prefer we could walk past each other on the streets and not know we were the same people because, I don't know, the quality of the camera or whatever.
Yeah, I had a similar experience, but for me, I just felt like everyone's in the same boat or a similar boat, especially if you're working for the same company, and the conversations end up going to just going back to COVID.
Yeah.
So it just feels like I'm not actually having a genuine connection or conversation with just two people that are talking about COVID, and you have your opinion, I have my opinion. Maybe lifestyle wise a lot of things are aligned, again, maybe if you're working in the same company, but oh yeah, the pandemic is
One tip for that would be just say we're not going to talk about COVID. Tell me, or even the question of tell me anything else but COVID. And then the person will be like, oh, well, and you, who knows what will come out, right?
Yeah, true. That's a good way to do it. I can see why you would prefer that.
Well, chances are you could go on a tangent talking about your first pet and your favourite primary school teacher. And then, a primary school teacher actually got COVID and it got trashed. Somehow it's going to come back.
It comes back somehow, isn't it?
Somehow. Because it's our lives. It's that's what we're living and breathing through this situation as we speak and have done for months now. Over a year now.
Yes.
Over a year now, which is a crazy concept when you really think about it.
I don't think we're out of this year.
We're not even out of the woods yet.
I think 21's out. I'm thinking 22, 23. Mm, but I'm ruling 21 out, man. I think we're still continuing to adapt. We still need to continue to adapt. That's the only choice we have. I don't think there's any going back to normal. This is normal now.
So, tell me anything apart from COVID.
Oh, my aunt's sister's dog.
Well, do you know, I had this meeting. I was having training, and obviously most training now is virtually. So it was on like a Zoom meeting. And there was quite a few of us on it, and they would put us in private rooms while we were having this meeting so we could talk one-on-one in groups. And there was, in fact, no, I only spoke to one guy, but each time they put me and this guy in this private room to have a conversation, and it was an old boy. So he's just got obviously he's old, he's got so many freaking stories that he could give. And we started talking about all sorts of stuff. Did we talk about COVID a bit? But it was mainly just random stories that he was telling. Well, because obviously I've recently had a baby. He's one now. But kid talk. I did kid talk. He did kid talk. So I don't know. Again, and one thing he was saying when we get back to the group, because we had to give feedback. And someone that we would be given a topic to discuss in the private rooms. Then when you come back to the big group, you would report back on how you felt and stuff like that. And this guy was saying when he spoke to me, he felt as if he wasn't worried about everything that was going on with COVID and stuff like that. And I think it did come down to, because I didn't want to hear about COVID. Tell me.
Just have a normal conversation.
Yeah. COVID's there. It's not going anywhere. But we can't get bogged down. Easy for me to say, perhaps. So I can appreciate that some people are in situations where it completely has. But at the same time, I feel throughout any darkness, it's important to be able to have a laugh.
Yeah, I had a similar conversation. I had a friend who called me the other day, and we were just having a catch up, and he was telling me, he was asking questions, how's work going, how's life, how, you're doing well with the lockdown, asking some nice questions like, how's your mental health? And I guess from previous conversations, I knew that he was doing quite well. He was working for a company, COVID hit, he started his own company, and he's left his job now, and that's what he does, and he's been doing quite well. And he came up and he was like, do you know what's really difficult, having conversations with people, because a lot of people are in a situation where, things aren't going great for them. But I'll be honest, 2020 has been the best year of my life. And it's and I feel bad about that. And I feel like there's things that I can't do and I can't say or I can't share. Or I can't have these conversations with people because
everyone is global.
I'm not trying to rub my winnings in people's faces. Mm. And I was like, I hear that.
It's a beautiful place to be.
But I hear that it's deep, but I also appreciate that it's nice for you to have those things for yourself,
for your mental 100%. Health. I think
so
it's important to. It can't just be bad. That can be a bit too heavy for anyone to.
Yeah, you have to celebrate your wins in some way, shape, or form, because if you don't, you might as well have just taken a loss. I feel like in order for you to really feel that fulfillment, it motivates you. It's good to have gratification for something you've been able to achieve. For him, it's been the best year of his life. He was able to completely change his life around. But maybe the people that he is around or was around or is close friends with, it's not the same for them. So it's normally those people, even your family now, normally those people, something good happens for you, especially work related. How do you then come to your family, which has been struggling through this whole pandemic, and, you know, share that experience with them and not feel guilty about doing that, or not making it feel like, oh man, things are good for me, but, you know, it's not as good.
At the same time, it's like bringing light to your family, right? It's like, oh, we've had bad times a lot, but here's some good news. And it's only if you have like a resentful family where that may not be the best thing, but yeah. All right.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics, anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lam.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
Hey, Okello here. This section is a space where we'll be sharing short stories, creative experiences, and art. This week, I'll be telling you about the tale of Sengbe Pierre the Gallant. The Tale of Sengbe Pierre the Gallant, Part 2. In 1839, slave traders kidnapped Pierre while he was working in the rice fields. He was taken to Lomboko off the Galleons coast. He, with countless others, was sent to Havana, Cuba, to be sold into slavery. Pierre and 52 men, women, and children were purchased by two Spanish plantation owners and boarded onto the schooner La Amistad.
With calmness and stillness, it comes to an end. We hope you found some gems and go away richer in soul and spirit. We're showing you the three paths of the sage. Your path is your own.